lies, lies, and more lies. Here on Guerrilla Radio, we're going to be dispelling myths this evening. We're talking about lies, wars, the empire. We're also getting your views from the street on why a war in Iraq ought to be opposed. That's another war show, but I'm sure you're not getting tired of it. Certainly the U.S. administration isn't getting tired of talking about war, so you mustn't be tired of hearing about it just yet. We're going to be telling you about all the events coming up in your community, and well, stay tuned. There's going to be a full show. We'll start off, as per usual, with This Day in History. Thanks again for joining us on another edition of Guerrilla Radio. This day is February the 13th, and hopefully you'll stick with us.
I believe we are just going to kind of run right into This Day in History now because, we want to talk. We want to talk and talk and talk. And the doctor's here, of course, so there's going to be lots of talking going on. So This Day in History, February 13th, there was a number of very interesting things going on. So we go back to 1349, when the Jews were expelled from Bergstorf, Switzerland. In 1633, the Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei arrived in Rome for trial before Inquisition, for professing his belief that the Earth revolved around the Sun. In 1641, the Iroquois Confederacy began war against Canada. Quote-unquote Canada, I suppose. 1692, in Scotland, the massacre of Scots by the English army. That was in Glencoe. In 1837, in the U.S., the Flower Riot in New York City took place. Early American riot of the poor against the high price of flour. 6,000 New Yorkers attended a bread, meat, rent, and fuel meeting in Chatham Square and assaulted local flour merchants who, they claimed, were hoarding flour in order to drive up the price. They drove the police and mayor to cover and stormed a flour warehouse. In 1866, in the U.S., Jesse James held up his first bank, Liberty, in Liberty, Missouri. You know how much he got? $15,000. That was in 1866. In 1898, in the U.S., Emma Goldman was scheduled to speak to the Philosophical Society in Brooklyn. In 1907, in England, the English suffragettes stormed the British Parliament, and 60 women were arrested. In 1917, in Russia, strikes and meetings were held in Petrograd factories, beginning the Russian Revolution. In 1932, in Denmark, Emma Goldman again lectured at Copenhagen University on Dictatorship, a World Menace. In 1937, in Scotland, Emma Goldman again, she had a very busy day, met with local anarchists at the home of Frank Leech, secretary of the Anti-Parliamentary Communist Federation. In 1945, in Germany, 135,000, this is one day we're talking about, 135,000 were killed in Allied firebombing of Dresden. This remains a little-known event even today, as the Allies downplay this slaughter of innocents and devote propaganda to the German atrocities. In 1960, France became the fourth nuclear power. Nuclear, not nuclear, nuclear. In 1966, the USSR performed a nuclear test. In 1967, in the US, the National Student Association revealed that it had, quote, secretly and indirectly, unquote, received more than $3 million from the CIA over a 15-year period. NSA President Eugene Grove denied any of the money was used for intelligence work. In 1967, in the U.S. again, carrying huge photos of napalmed Vietnamese children, 2,500 members of the group Women Strike for Peace stormed the Pentagon, demanding to see, quote, the generals who send our sons to Vietnam. In 1978, in Australia, early in the morning, a bomb exploded in front of the 42-story Hilton Hotel in Sydney, the location of a conference of leaders of Asian and Pacific Commonwealth countries. In 1985, the South African police arrested 13 people, nearly all the leaders of the United Democratic Front. In 1990, U.S., England, France, and then it lists England again. That's wrong. The U.S., England, and France gave Germany the okay to reunify. And in 1991, during the Persian Gulf War, approximately 400 Iraqi civilians, mostly women and children, were killed during a U.S. laser-guided missile attack on a fortified bunker in the center of Baghdad. And that's what happened on this day in history. You know it's a good day in history when the song plays out and I keep talking. But now it's time for the other folks to start talking.
All right. So once again, you are listening to Guerrilla Radio here on CKDU. Assuming that you're in Metro, you've got us on 97.5. Elsewhere in the world, through the A-Infos Radio Project or via the web at http://ckdu.dal.ca. You can pick us up and hopefully you're tuning in. You're a regular listener, or even if you're not, there's plenty for all today. We're going to be talking, I think, primarily about the war in Iraq, but proving that truth is stranger than fiction, I wanted to run down some of my favorite headlines from the week past, just prior to our getting going, because it's unbelievable some of the things that I've seen in this past week. And I think it all is going to probably play into the war on terrorism, the war on Iraq, the war, and or opposition. And we're going to hear some of your reasons for opposing the war, but I guess principally what I've seen this week is often you hear of people, and it seems as though we're sort of hedging our bets, sitting on our hands, saying, well, you know, if things get really bad, then we'll do something about it. Well, this week we've seen armed security forces walking the streets of downtown New York. We've seen tanks at Heathrow Airport. We've heard that the Canadian government will not, they shot down a bill that would say joining a war in Iraq is only an option if the UN gives it the nod. They've said, well, no, you know, as long as there's good reason, we'll do it. The UN doesn't have to say so. And it's pretty overwhelming. We've seen a lot happen in the past week. And Saturday, as well as being the big day of demonstrations against this new war on Iraq, is here. It's the day to be patriotic and to wave your flag. It's going to be Flag Day. That's my interesting fact for the week, if you can imagine.
Like the official holiday Flag Day?
Well, it's lesser here, of course, than it would be in the U.S., but with all this debate about direct action and flag burnings flying around, I thought that I'd toss that out there. But yeah, somewhat Orwellian, the stuff that's going on. And so I've been considering the old adage that the truth will set you free, and I'm thinking that while we often share with you a nugget or two of truth here on Guerrilla Radio, that's just not the case. But we'll get on with the show, and we'll share with you what we know, and maybe we'll see what we can do today. But quite a week
indeed. I got some stories here that we should definitely talk about. I probably have the stories if my English teachers are listening to me. We have 30 Afghans killed by Allied bombings yesterday. Remember Afghanistan? Yeah. Remember Osama bin Laden and Mullah Omar? Yeah. That was only a year and a bit ago, but we've already forgotten all about that, and we're on to the Beast of Baghdad. But here at Guerrilla Radio, we might rehash what's going on in Afghanistan just as a little bit of a minder about what's probably going to happen in Iraq as well. And mostly our goal here on the show today is going to get your blood going to make sure that on Saturday you don't miss the largest anti-war demonstration in history.
And don't stay home and watch it on the TV, for goodness sake.
And it needs to be not only the largest in that 40 cities. So, you know, 40 cities, that means it's the largest. I think it needs to be the largest in terms of people actually showing up.
Yeah, not only that, but I think it's 450 at this point.
No, it's 40 cities in Canada. That's
exactly.
Why I said right. That.
400 worldwide, 60 countries, 5 continents, 300 cities in Europe and North America, 50 in Asia and Latin America.
Why only 5 continents? What's with the other 2?
I think it's all of them, actually, the list that I've seen.
Okay.
Absolutely. Should we? Are we going to move on to the announcements now, or are we going to do some, yeah, announcements? Do you want to do the announcements? No. All right. I got a little distracted during that opening monologue. We've got a special guest hanging out in the studio and just hearing what's going on. Going to be one of the voices you hear later on when we go to people on the street to see why it is that they feel a war needs to be opposed. Because we've been talking so much about popular dissent and how it is that even if governments, within inverted commas here, around the world seem to be more or less on side with a renewed conflict in the Gulf. The ordinary folks on the street, they're not so into this. And we've been throwing around statistics too much. So today's project was to go and meet people on their lunch hour just here on campus and around the city and get some views. So anyway, but what we've got is we've got a series of anti-war events coming up that I guess I'm going to throw out there prior to our continuing on with world news and current events. Nova Scotia Voice of Women, it's a group here in the city, but the Voice of Women, they're fairly well known. There's going to be a silent vigil held tomorrow in front of the Spring Garden Road Library at noon. It's going to run till 1 o'clock, and I think they're playing off the Valentine's theme here. Saying war is not the answer and it's time to wear your heart on your sleeve, so let everybody know, of course. And this leading up to, of course, Saturday, which is to be a peace march. Well, here in Halifax, I'll give you all the details. February the 15th starts at 1 p.m. at the South Commons. That's over by, what would be the municipal pool if it weren't the middle of the winter. And it says here, this is from our good friend JDG, who often joins us up here in the studio, that Saturday is going to be a truly global day of action and shaping up to be the largest global protest against war ever. All in capital letters with exclamation points. Thanks. And that's going to start at the South Commons and make its way down to the Grand Parade, so you can probably catch it en route if you can't make it there for one. But this isn't something to be missed. It says bring all your friends, your posters, come and bring your voices. And if you need more information, they drop a little address here for the computers, which is http://www.hfxpeace.shabukto.org, and it's an amazing site. I checked it out. And then we've got on Monday, this one is listed under our announcements under the category of disobedience, which is a great word if you ever want to break it down. I was thinking about it today. Who wants to obey, really? So boring. Nonviolent civil disobedience is a tried and true tactic of popular resistance, says Chris. And on Monday, February the 17th at 9 a.m., a rally starting at the Grand Parade will march in an effort to create some old-time peaceful disobedience and disruption. If you want to get involved in anti-war efforts, they encourage you to not only go to the demonstration this Saturday, and they said that, not me, but that they'd love your help if you get in touch with them, making banners, placards, and getting ready for this. And the email, if you want to get in touch with these folks, is lastingpeace, all one word, at ziplip.com. And I'm sure that we're going to be talking about the merits of civil disobedience when we start talking about protest a little later on. We've done it before, and we'll do it again. Looking way into the future, real quick heads up, the St. Mary's Activist Collective is in late February, the 28th of February, very last day. That weekend, they're going to be hosting a conference. And I say this because I know that they're looking for people's comments, questions, and for volunteers to help make this happen. It's going to be a conference looking at organizing on campuses and in communities and building a stronger anti-war movement, anti-globalization movement, looking critically at capitalism. If you want to get in touch with these people, they've got their own office, if you can imagine. The St. Mary's Activist Coalition at St. Mary's University, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Student Center, and the room is 514, or you can give them a ring on the telephone at 496-8262. That's it for the announcements, but I always feel good when we're able to do our part and put it out there and keep people in the metro area informed. What's the deal there?
Do you want to roll to some Saul Williams before we come back to discuss war?
We could break it up and rock a little Saul Williams, spoken word artist, and actually pretty inspirational at times. We've gotten pretty into, here on Guerrilla Radio, putting together some tunes that are hopefully going to make people think. I think this one is off of, actually, the compilation that the doctor put together there a couple of weeks ago. Maybe you can throw to it and put it in context for people if that's what they're going to need.
Sure. We put together for the Pledge Week, you might remember, we put together, Dude, Are You Being Anti-American? And it's the Anti-American Mix, 14 tracks from your favorite hip-hop stars. And you can email guerrillaradio@ziplip.com if you'd like to get your version. I think Dave got his version by pledging, but you can get your version for a small donation to the G7 Legal Defense Fund, and you get yourself 13 hot tracks. This is one of them, Saul Williams.
I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood. beats in blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats in blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. Oh, say can you, 20,000 Negro leagues beneath a seafoam clouds laced with ink that stains when rains makes books of trees that once upon a dawn's early light born bitch of night, children of night make queens take kings hereafter, thereafter the tricklings and demands and our decisions be timely. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the offspring of spring, reborn, pledged and sworn, the risen ash of a flag burned and torn. I'm the blood of the womb, the risen tide of the moon, the dark side that the light cannot hide. I'm the pages of history, read between the lines, the living truth behind your symbols and signs. I'm the son of a minister, love of a teacher, my mother taught me well, so I rebel. I'm the bell retold, yet a story untold, the hidden force behind a rock that was rolled. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. Oh, say can you, 20,000 Negro leagues beneath the seafoam clouds laced with ink that stains when rains makes books of trees that once upon a dawn, jolly light, born bitch of night, children of night, may queens take kings hereafter, thereafter, the tricklings and demands that our decisions be timely. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. I'm the American born of beats and blood, the concert of the sun unplugged. Lift every voice and sing. Lift every voice and sing. And you don't stop. You don't stop.
For 5 years, Street Feet has been the voice of the poor in Metro. Street Feet is a street newspaper that focuses on issues of poverty. It provides a voice for the poor and needy and develops a critical consciousness in its readers and contributors. Street Feet is a community-based solution to poverty. It generates income for those in need. You can help Street Feet celebrate its 5th anniversary. Buy a newspaper from a vendor on the street for $1 or subscribe for $20 per year. To contact the newspaper and set up a subscription, or just to congratulate Street Feet on its 5 years of hard work, call Street Feet at 453-5510.
Back at Guerrilla Radio, apparently Rob's not so down with that Saul Williams song compared to the rest of the Saul Williams songs we could have played. It's probably true. Saul Williams does have some humdingers, even though that was a good song. It needed to be directly related to America, and it needed to be saying America in an anti-American tone for it to fit on the dude, are you being anti-American mix? So there's the qualifier. Normally not rhyming over tracks, as Saul Williams says, but that may be a little bit overproduced, that song, according to Dr. Robert McGregor. So as we normally do here on Guerrilla Radio, last week we got sort of caught up in what we were discussing, and we didn't give you everything that we wanted to. And I think that as this demonstration on Saturday, the largest anti-war demonstration in history comes around, I think that it's good to fill your back pocket with some information so that you realize the importance of why we need to be on the streets on Saturday. And if you do need any more motivation than the pathetic case for war that has been put forward, namely no case for war, then you might want to hear about Operation Shock and Awe. This came out, actually, this war plan's been out for about 2 weeks now, but just the way we've been caught up here on Guerrilla Radio talking about so much that we're inundated, the propaganda machine is spewing out stuff faster than we can put it down. Actually, that's not true. We can put it down pretty quickly, but we got a little caught up in putting Colin Powell in his place after talking about decades of connections between Saddam and Al-Qaeda, despite the fact that Al-Qaeda has only been together for 5 years. But I digress. Operation Shock and Awe is a National Defense University policy paper that was given to the Pentagon, and by all accounts in the Pentagon, it is the base war plan for the coming engagement with Iraq, which will undoubtedly happen within the next 2 or 3 weeks. Operation Shock and Awe involves 400 cruise missiles each night for 2 nights. That's 800 cruise missiles. The entire Gulf War, there was something like 310 cruise missiles used in the entire war. Cruise missiles are between $1 and $2 million. They're massive rockets made by Lockheed Martin and Boeing corporations. They're generally loaded with about 1,000 pounds of explosives, and usually those explosives are either depleted uranium heads or are blast fragmentation munitions. And what blast fragmentation munitions are cluster bombs, which basically means that the bomb explodes, littering bomblets out. These bomblets you probably might have seen during the war in Afghanistan were exactly the same size as the peanut butter jars the Allies were dropping in after they dropped the cluster bombs. And they dropped cluster bombs in marketplaces in Belgrade too in 1999, and there's some pretty horrific pictures. They're mostly it's mostly for soft targets, what are called soft targets, namely targets that can be penetrated with basic munitions. So that's a cruise missile. 800 of these in 2 nights at $1 million a piece is, of course, about $1 billion worth of missiles. The CBC reports that to complement the 800 cruise missiles, there will also be some 2,000 what are called dumb bombs, which will surely not find their targets unless their target is just mass destruction in Baghdad, which, of course, will surely happen when you consider that 4 million people live in Baghdad. That's larger than the city of Toronto, and it's pretty densely populated, oldest city, I guess, on Earth. So we've got a pretty serious situation there. It's called Operation Shock and Awe, and the author of the report, Harlan Ullman, was quoted on CBS with Dan Rather saying that the effect is supposed to be psychological destruction of the enemy's will to fight. And this is the key, because as we've talked at length here on Guerrilla Radio, they're attempting to go, the war plan as it stands is unavoidable as far as battling in the cities go. They're going to have to go into the city. Saddam has entrenched Baghdad, and is preparing his National Guard troops, Republican Guard troops, to defend the city and force the Americans to come right into the heart of Baghdad. Again, 4 million people. So the idea is to bomb them silly in 2 days and create such psychological destruction as to destroy the enemy's will to fight. So I guess the idea is to just lay the place to waste, and then the way the Pentagon dreams it up, everyone will come out with their hands up kissing the great liberator who will drive down the street in tanks or what have you. Of course, the case will be very much different than that. This war is going to take probably months, and it's going to be bloody and ugly. United Nations World Health Organization reports have at very least 500,000 Iraqis deprived of basic medicines based on and casualties based on the first 48 hours of war following that plan. So you don't need too much comment on that, other than I'll quote Harlan Ullman, the author of the report, saying that so what you have after this bombing is the simultaneous effect, rather like the nuclear weapons at Hiroshima, not taking days or weeks, but in minutes. And as Ainsley said on This Week in History, this is the anniversary of the Dresden bombing, which happened by after the war essentially had been not over, but was in its final stages for sure, and the end was in sight. Dresden, by all accounts, had no military targets whatsoever. It's a cultural center of Germany, and the point was to just destroy the Germans' will to fight. And so the way that they did it is in one night, in one single night in Dresden, they flew bombing raids so intense, so constant, so persistent, that they actually created a fireball that basically swallowed the city of Dresden. The pilots weren't expecting it, the military planners weren't expecting it, but they just dropped such an unbelievable saturation of bombs that they created a heat vort, a heat wall, essentially a backdraft that just swallowed the city, and pilot reports are unbelievably shocking from there. 150,000 people at least were killed, which is more than the bombings of Hiroshima, which were also executed when the end of the war was in sight. And if Hiroshima wasn't, then Nagasaki absolutely was 6 days after Hiroshima. That was essentially a bombing to destroy the psychological will of the people after the war, for all intents and purposes, was over. So when the Pentagon says that this Operation Shock and Awe is an unprecedented bombing raid of 800,000 pounds of cruise missiles in 48 hours, when you have things like Ainslie dropping this week in this day in history, you realize that it's not an unprecedented attack, and shocking saturation bombings by us nice guys in war. We're always fighting against evil, and we're always the good side. When you read about Dresden, Kurt Vonnegut wrote a book called Slaughterhouse-Five that you might want to check out.
Because he was there.
Because he was there.
I saw that like on a website that I was looking at. It was saying it took him 20 years to write that.
Yeah.
He was just like thinking about it and just like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine being there?
Yeah, my cheeks are shivering actually thinking about that, because that is an unbelievable story. And if you've ever read Vonnegut, if you haven't read Vonnegut, I highly encourage you to read Vonnegut. He's writing basically what would be called science fiction in the 60s and 70s, and it now is called black humor because it came true. So science fiction come reality is Kurt Vonnegut. But he writes this book, and it's unbelievable. He says in it that, it took him 20 years to write the book. And the reason is because how do you ever discuss such horror? How do you ever discuss such massacre, such killing, such senseless killing? You don't. And he talks a lot about weapons manufacturers in that book. And we're going to roll around now to...
We're going to play a little song just to break it up a bit. This is, in-house specialty, Piggy. This is Don't Hurt My Friends.
Who wants to live in a frozen land with no relief for the working hand? Though the sadness comes to us all sometimes, I'll still live here in the Maritimes. I want to live by the Atlantic Sea, under open skies with friends of mine. I want to live in the cold sunshine on the rocky coast with friends of mine. To live in a distant place, hiding out in fear in a crowded space. So don't suffer alone in these terrible times. Come live with us in the Maritimes. Despite the lies of the Reform Party, new workers will build our economy. So if immigrants come to the Maritimes, be good to them. They are friends of mine.
come and live by the Atlantic Sea, on the rocky coast, under open skies. I said, come and live in the cold sunshine. I will stand by you. You are a friend of mine.
All right, so as though you haven't heard enough reasons in the past weeks, even just today, why it is that maybe you want to start thinking a little more critically about this here war before you go out and get your war on, what we did today was, because you spend an awful lot of time here listening to me and Ainsley and the doctor yammer and stammer into this big black box of ours, and magically it appears in your living room, you get to hear our reasons every week, and you know, again and again and again, we're telling you more or less the same things. So you need to hear them. I mean, don't get me wrong. The idea today was to go out, catch people on their lunch hour, because as we said, popular sentiment is growing. These aren't issues that are inaccessible. They're things that really people are in a pretty good position to talk about. You know, concern for other human life is it's by no means extraordinary. As a matter of fact, it's more or less universal, and I seldom say things of this nature. But the idea is that right now we're going to hit you with 10 of our favorite respondents from the day, and maybe we'll try to do this a little more regularly. When posed the question, you know, we gave them each 15 seconds tops, and they were posed the question, what's one reason why a war in Iraq ought to be opposed?
It won't accomplish anything. I'm opposing a war in Iraq because I'm tired of supporting an ignorant system.
Because war in Iraq means setting a precedent where the United States can lobby the entire world for its own interests. And Colombia is going to be next.
We've only had nuclear weapons for the past 60 years, and we've spent that past 60 years building as many as we can and aiming them all at each other. And the only real hope for the next couple thousands of years, perhaps, of not killing each other is maybe organizations like the UN, and this war is going to break the back of the UN if it goes through.
I think quite simply because the U.S. Can't be trusted, as they proved at the end of World War II. And even though such organizations have been developed, such as the U.N., to avert such catastrophes, if they're willing to go against the U.N.'s word right now, then I don't think they can be trusted.
Some people think this is a war to control Middle Eastern oil reserves. However, senior members of the Bush cabinet worked on a plan to take over Iraq long before the 2000 presidential election.
Okay.
I'm just gonna...
To quote a song that my father seems to be fond of, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Because the war is wrong because colonialism by a different name is still, you know, exactly the same thing. You call it regime change or whatever you want. It's still, you know, the same basic principle of one country believing it can manipulate, you know, the future of another one.
I'm opposed to the war in Iraq because I'm as much opposed to a capitalist war as I am to capitalist peace.
Killing civilians just isn't the solution to killing civilians.
All right, well, Guerrilla Radio once again proving that we're keeping it real and rocking it lo-fi. You hear the rough edits and the wind in the background. That's the tops. That's what we're all about. But also we're all about, obviously, as you heard, differences of opinion, getting up on the air. Everyone is essentially offered a place to spit their opinions out at Metro from here on CKDU. And particularly, we take that pretty seriously here on Guerrilla Radio. One of the things that we often encourage y'all folks to do, which you haven't been doing today, but maybe you will in this last 10 minutes, is you can ring us up here in the studio when we put tunes on. Our number is 494-2487. And if you want to get hold of us during the week, you've got ideas, you've got stories, you've got opinions, you've got commentary, you can write us letters, well, electronic bits of letters anyway. Our email address is guerrillaradio, that's all one word, GUERRILLARADIO, at ziplip.com, and we're happy to hear from you. And we did get a call, actually. I lied. We got a call there from a caller who was listening to Dr. Ron on the radio, At the same time, he was reading a Dr. Ron column via a webpage that we often hype called Be the Change. It's www.bethechange.ca. And he thought that he'd better call and talk to Dr. Ron. So people can't get enough Guerrilla Radio. Hopefully you're in the same boat. I think we're going to run back now over to the doctor sitting across from me here. We got 10 minutes left before we're at the top of the hour, which is when you'll be catching up with our good friend Glenn Coolin, who's going to rock some tunes for you, local and international Celtic tracks. But we've still got 10 minutes, and you have yet to get the message, I think. I'd better be seeing all of you, all the regular audience, Natalie and Jackie and Max. I want all you folks to be out on Saturday. I'm not in the habit of telling people what to do, but now you've been addressed directly via community radio, so we'll see you out there.
Let me just say that the phone call was from my roommate, Solar Web Commander Andrew Angus, so it wasn't just some secret fan out there. It's a highly contrived plot to push Be the Change and the recent articles that are up there that you can get every week. I have a question that is just a basic question. After this war in Iraq, there's going to be an army of occupation in Baghdad. That is an American army commander a la General Douglas MacArthur after the Second World War writing the Constitution of Japan. We're going to have an army of occupation in Baghdad for at least a year and a half, according to basic Pentagon reports.
I heard up to 10, Doctor. And that's conservative estimates. Where I'm coming from are saying like 5 to 10.
So is there going to be something fundamentally different? I guess I'm going to ask a rhetorical question because although the circumstances are completely different, I think the general, someone said in those little snippets that colonial war is colonial war, regardless of what you call it. And how is an army of occupation in Baghdad going to be fundamentally different than an army of occupation in the West Bank and Gaza? And I'm curious that how it is that I think we found some weapons yesterday in the Middle East that might fire more than 150 miles, which is Saddam's limit. His most threatening weapons they've found so far, 180 miles of distance. And this is, of course, only a few short miles away from Israel, who has been occupying the West Bank and Gaza for the past 35 years, and who also has an undeclared nuclear weapons arsenal of a modest count of 225 nuclear weapons. And if you're ever interested in watching government officials squirm, I highly recommend checking out Ari Fleischer's press briefings. It's a sort of I guess it's masochistic in a way that what I've been doing of late. Maybe it's because Dalhousie's providing me with an insufficient education to keep me busy, but I've been spending my time at whitehouse.gov and reading Ari Fleischer's press briefings. And let me tell you, it is unbelievable to watch. There's only about three critical journalists in the entire White House press corps, but reading those three, Helen Thomas, she's an 85-year-old veteran White House correspondent. She gives Ari Fleischer the time of his life every day. Russell Mulkebar from Multinational Monitor. And then there's just a couple comes and goes that, but those two particularly. And watching Ari Fleischer squirm around the question of whether Israel had nuclear weapons and why it was that there was not nuclear weapons inspectors going into Israel to check out this undeclared weapons reserves was unbelievable, because he cannot admit that Israel has nuclear weapons. So something that the entire world knows, something that crazy college kids can sit in the Guerrilla Radio Media Center and tell you about, the official White House spokesperson cannot admit that the American government acknowledges nuclear weapons in Israel. It's a sham. The whole thing's a sham. To say nothing of the link between the fact that the Security Council Resolution 1441, which is the reason that they're trying to get a second resolution, is because Iraq is flouting the UN Security Council resolution, which it's debatable that they even are. Most likely their non-compliance is American propaganda to the hilt, but How is floating Resolution 1441 any different than Israel floating any of the key resolutions calling for the withdrawal from the occupied territories behind 1967 borders, which Israel and the Americans have vetoed Security Council calls to adhere to the resolution 65 times in the last 30 years. They do it once a year, at least annually, vetoes Israel's necessity to adhere to Security Council resolutions, and it's justifying a war which is going to kill hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq is the same reasoning, namely supposed nuclear weapons and supposedly floating UN resolutions is going to lead to this war. In Israel, you have absolute floating of the UN Security Council resolutions and absolute certainty of nuclear weapons. Someone, I think, said it's colonial war. Whatever you call it, it is colonial war. And
that was our friend DP for those Rhyme for Reason fans out there.
Nice.
Hitting the nail on the head, I think. Absolutely. Yeah, we had a couple of really solid responses there. But actually, you know what? We'd better just get on with the show. We got 5 minutes left. So I guess once more, it's about time for us probably to remind people about Saturday. Like, I feel pretty strongly that we've got to keep this message going that...
I wanted to jump in earlier when you were talking about the rally and you were saying, bring your noisemakers, bring your dog, bring your scarves, whatever. And I wanted to say, bring your mother.
Yes.
Because you know what? I continuously have this feeling that if I was living in England, my mother would be going to these things. But just because of the way that we are in Canada, in our cities and in our communities, we're totally separated from what's actually going on. And we can sort of sit back and say, well... You know, like I think you were saying earlier, well, wait till something big happens and then I'll do something. Or, you know, it's not affecting me directly. I don't know what I can do. I want my mother to go. I want your mother to go.
Hey, my mom's going to be there. So is my sister. Absolutely.
Good.
And this is a trend that's been going on, this idea of talk to your friends, talk to your family and find out. Well, I guess don't talk to your family about whether your family's going, because you should already have been doing that. But this is the whole idea. This movement has included... portions of the population that normally don't get out, aren't active. And if you need the motivation to say, instead of saying wait till something big happens and then I'll come out, because we know once the bombs drop there's going to be all kinds of reasons to
oppose
the war. Oh,
but bombs have been dropping anyway, right?
They
so have been. So that's not anything you can wait for.
Absolutely. but to put it frankly, we're looking at probably the last 2, maybe 3 weeks before a war starts. There's absolutely nothing that Iraqis can do right now. There's absolutely nothing that the Iraqi people can do at all. And they're are in Baghdad, they're in Iraq right now, and their only hope of avoiding the catastrophe of Operation Shock and Awe and of wide-scale bombing and invasion, armies of occupation, and all kinds of grisly colonial rule is for us here in our Western worlds, in our comfy, apathetic homes, to rise up and say that we're not going to allow our governments to do to carry on this war in our name. We are this is something big, because we are the last chance to avert this war. It's long past the point of Iraqis being able to do anything about it. It's long past the point of even Saddam Hussein being able to do anything about it. As we know, the United Nations not going to be able to do anything about it, because George Bush, with his cowboy hat and his cowboy language, has said we're going in to Iraq regardless. And that's where we get terminology coalition of the willing. Coalition of the willing. Who's willing to be on side when the oil contracts are distributed after the army of occupation takes Iraq? It's the last chance is us.
But does this not beg the question, what are they waiting for? It does for me. If they're saying, you know what, no matter what anybody says, we're doing this. And they've got people there. And
well,
so what are they waiting for?
Maybe Saturday will be further cause for hesitation. I'm skeptical most of the time, but let's hope that that we do in fact see, you know, a billion people out across the world. And have our moms and our sisters there and at least give further cause to hesitate, if not something more.
Well, his approval rating's been going down the tubes, and it's interesting because his approval rating was going down, and that's why he started the war just like his father did, was, you know, you start a war, then you get your country behind you, and, you know, you'll get reelected, but it's just not working that way for him.
No, it's an absolutely unprecedented anti-war movement. And the point is, we've never seen what our governments will do when we rise up in massive numbers to oppose war. It's never happened before. So let's challenge. Let's do it. And let's see whether our governments, I think here at Guerrilla Radio, we know where our governments stand. But let's see a mass movement decide where it is that our governments, are they going to listen to the fact that...
So as we've got 1 minute left and I can see the music coming up, let's one more time say the 15th, 1 o'clock. South Commons by the old swimming pool,
and
remind everyone, as we quote our friend JD maybe, that anti-war activism is not just for hippies anymore.
And there will be food, not bombs, at the rally as well. That's another reason to go. Hot food on a cold day.
Give the place and the time one more.
North Commons by the pavilion at 1 p.m. marching down to Parade Square. We will be there.